CataractCoach.com podcast series, episode number 151, with Dr. Rudrani Bondnick. Integrative and functional ophthalmology. You will learn a lot from this episode because I certainly did. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. Today, I've got a very special guest. I got Dr. Ronnie Bondnick, who's going to teach us, especially me, about integrative ophthalmology and functional medicine, of which I know almost nothing about. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me. Super excited to be here.
Now, I see behind you on the shelf, you've got some of your books, which are very well received. I actually looked this up, especially the Beyond Carrots book. That's very specific to what we do, which is ophthalmology, obviously.
Yeah, I'll have to send you a copy, by the way. It all has to do with, you know, this stage in my career where I'm trying to develop this field of integrative ophthalmology. I think maybe one or two academic centers have an integrative ophthalmology kind of a department, but I think it's just not known. And it's really my goal is to elevate people's knowledge in this area. So the books are part of it. Some of the other things I do are part of it, but I'm just super excited to get this information out there.
Well, I asked Google Gemini AI, who is the leader in this field, integrative ophthalmology and functional medicine? And they said you.
Really? Wow.
I've got the live fish on the hook. I'm going to ask all the questions I need. So now tell us about you have a book, I see it behind you, called Beyond Carrots, which was amazing. Tell us about what that book brings to the table.
Yeah, so the book is actually written for the public, but practitioners can learn so much from it also. And it's all about using science-based nutrition to support our eye health. And, you know, a lot of people, when they think about our eyes, the public, the general public usually thinks, oh, if I just eat enough carrots, I'm going to have 20/20 vision, right? So there's a big myth out there about that. But the truth is, as we know, as ophthalmologists, our eyes are so complex. You know, there's the cornea, there's the lenses, the ciliary body, the retina, the optic nerve. All of these different parts of the eye have different nutritional needs. And so it's not just, okay, you just eat enough carrots, you get enough beta carotene, vitamin A, your vision is going to be perfect. It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. So we need to eat certain nutrients and a variety of different foods to get those nutrients. So that's why I wrote the book. And it actually, there's a funny story. It came about because during COVID, as probably you had to as well, we had to shut down our practices for a while. And so I wasn't able to see patients and I was kind of twiddling my thumbs, you know, watching the news and getting more and more, you know, anxious every day. But I started to do social media and I started this series called, Food Friday. And every Friday I would talk about a different food and how it was related to eye health and how it could benefit our eye health and how we should be incorporating it into our diet. So that's kind of how the book came about, because the full name of the book is Beyond Carrots, Best Foods for Eye Health A to Z. And basically every week during COVID, I would highlight a different food from a different letter of the alphabet. And then I took that, all those little, Instagram videos I did, all those reels I did, and I made it into a book. And it's really to raise the awareness that we need to eat better for our eyes. That's the bottom line.
I think that's a huge part of what we should do in general is eating better. I mean, there's been a change here in the US. I mean, when I was growing up in the 80s, oh my God, the sugar cereal nonsense was like so overboard.
Yeah.
There's a big change now. We eat far better. I try to only buy foods that my grandma could have bought 50 or 60 years ago.
Yes. Yes. That's really the direction that we should strive for, is to eat natural whole foods. I'm not talking about whole foods, the store, but whole foods, meaning the way nature intended, not processed, not ultra processed, no added sugars, no added salts and preservatives and all of that. We need to eat for our bodies. We need to eat for our eyes. And, I'll share this with you. A lot of people don't know this. When we think about macular degeneration, okay, we know that we have the AREDS studies, for example, AREDS 1, AREDS 2. These supplements can help reduce the risk of macular degeneration by 28% if you have intermediate stage. But did you know that there is a study done that shows that you can reduce your risk of macular degeneration by over 40%, 41 to 43%, if you eat a lot of lutein and zeaxanthin. Simply by eating those foods, wow, you can lower your risk by 41 to 43%. It's crazy that people don't know this. Eye doctors don't know.
What are these foods? I got to put them on my Costco list.
Yeah. So basically, you know, as eye doctors, we always think about the leafy greens, and kale is king. That is number one. It's the highest concentration of lutein and zeaxanthin available. Then spinach, collard greens, Swiss chard, like any leafy green is good for you. But also egg yolks, if you eat eggs, that don't throw away the yolk, because the yolk is where the magic is. You know, that beautiful orange yellow color, that's because of lutein and zeaxanthin. So eat the egg yolks. Corn. So just a fun fact, the scientific name for corn is Zea maize, and that's where the word zeaxanthin came from.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So zeaxanthin is high concentration in corn, particularly yellow corn, but other varieties of corn as well. Even spices can have lutein and zeaxanthin. So like paprika, high concentration of cayenne pepper. So I talk about all these foods in my book because people don't have to just eat one food every single day. They can eat a diversity to get what their eyes need, but you need to eat a lot of it. And when I mean a lot, I'm talking about, now this may shock some people because they may not normally eat this way, but I'm going to tell you this because this is what I tell my patients. Strive for 3 to 5 cups of leafy greens or equivalent a day.
That's a lot.
It depends how you have it. So if you think of like, oh my God, that's a huge salad. Yes, it would be a huge salad to have like 3 to 5 cups of kale and spinach in your salad. An easy way to do it is to do a green smoothie. Simple. Mm. And you blend it all together. So I'm going to share with you my favorite green smoothie recipe that will, so if you have this every day or even every other day, you will be completely supporting your eyes against conditions like macular degeneration, glaucoma. It'll even help with dry eyes. So what do you put in your green smoothie? Depending on the leafy green, 3 to 5 cups of your favorite leafy green, then add 1/2 cup to 1 cup of berries. And the darker the berry, the better.
Like so blueberries, blackberries.
Yes, exactly. Blackberries even better than blueberries, but blueberries are great too. Depending on where you live, bilberries, or if you don't like dark berries, even raspberries, strawberries are good. So 1/2 cup to 1 cup of berries with your smoothie. Add some seeds. So you're going to add some chia seeds, flax seeds, or hemp seeds. They're rich in an omega-3 called ALA. So we need omega-3s for our eyes and for dry eye prevention. So you're going to add like about 2 tablespoons of seeds. Add milk if you like milk. If you don't like milk, don't add the milk. Use some ice. And if you want it a little bit sweeter, because some of the greens can be a little bitter, you can add some fruit. And my favorite is actually bananas, apples, dates. Dates are amazing in this green smoothie. So you blend it all up and there you go. You have your ocular nutrition in one go for the day. And you can batch it. Keep it in the fridge and have it for like 2 days, 3 days. So not that hard to do, really.
And that's a big contrast to the SAD, S-A-D, the standard American diet. Tell us about this now.
Yes. So the standard American diet is what Uday, probably you and I grew up with, you know, in the 80s. Lots of added sugar, refined sugar. So not, you know, for example, white bread. You know, you think that, oh, bread is good for you. But no, white bread is just purely refined carbohydrates, really very little nutritional value. So stay away from those refined sugars. That's the number one thing in the SAD diet. Also, unhealthy fats, mainly omega-6 fats. So we're talking earlier about omega-3s that our eyes need, our brain needs it, our whole body needs omega-3s. But omega-6s tend to be more pro-inflammatory. So you want to stay away from processed foods that have omega-6s, but also processed foods in general. So stay away from those types of foods. And also, this is not officially part of the SAD diet, but related, going back to macular degeneration and nutritional approaches for macular degeneration, we know that if you have a lot of these SAD foods, also like cookies, cakes, pies, pastries, which I used to love, by the way, I don't eat them anymore, but I used to love all that food. It increases your risk of neovascular AMD.
Oh, if you eat
those types of foods, like baked foods, basically baked goods.
So is there a role of systemic inflammation influencing eye disease?
Yes. So again, it's omega-6s are higher in those types of baked goods, fried foods also, like deep fried foods, also processed meats. And so you want to just stay away from those because they're going to fuel inflammation. And, you know, we didn't yet talk about this, but we can talk about it. Functional medicine, a lot of people may not really know what functional medicine is. So I'll give you just like a little overview.
I don't know. Yeah. Teach me as if I'm 5 years old.
Okay. So functional medicine is basically looking at disease and looking at the root cause. And the root cause at a cellular level, like what's going on at a cellular level to cause dysfunction, to cause our mitochondria to not work properly, to cause oxidative stress, to cause inflammation, to trigger the immune system, to cause some kind of like autoimmune problem. So it's looking at it at a cellular level and trying to support it using nutrition, using lifestyle modifications, exercise, movement, lowering stress levels. Like it's trying to get to the root cause, not by putting a Band-Aid on it with a medication or something like that, but it's trying to address it again through things that are within people's control. And diet is really the cornerstone of functional medicine. Like many of my patients, when they come to see me for functional medicine evaluations, like the number one thing I talk to them about is their diet, their condition, and what they can do to try to turn things around using dietary modifications. And I'll give an example. Okay. So I'm also a neuro-ophthalmologist. And so as a neuro-ophthalmologist, I see a lot of autoimmune disease, like myasthenia gravis, thyroid eye disease. And yes, there are medications to treat these conditions. And yes, I do use medications when necessary, but I always talk to my patients about diet. And what I've seen, and this is anecdotal right now, because I haven't published this yet. Eventually soon I do hope to publish it, but patients with those types of autoimmune conditions are very sensitive, not only to the sad foods, but also dairy and gluten. And these types of foods may be triggering an immune response that may be contributing to their autoimmune disease. And what I tell my patients is, come off for 3 months, come off the dairy and come off the gluten. Kind of reset your system. Reset. And then try to reintroduce some of those foods and see what happens. So it's not like lifelong I'm telling them, oh, you have to be gluten-free for your life or no dairy for your life. No, I'm just saying do it for 3 months, then slowly reintroduce. And this is called an elimination diet, by the way, which is very, it's like a foundation also of functional medicine, the elimination diet. But reintroduce and see how your body reacts and see what happens. And patients automatically, when they go off of something for 3 months and they accidentally have a little bit of it, like for example, dairy and myasthenia, dairy is a big trigger for myasthenia. That's what I've found in my patients. They accidentally have like a little dairy. They go out to eat. They have some cheese, you know, accidentally, or they have a little butter in their pasta or something. And the next day, immediately, they'll flare up. They'll have their double vision again. They'll have their ptosis again. Wow. It's fascinating.
I had no idea. Wow. I think that's one of the parts of medicine that we just kind of never got educated on in medical school. We just never had lectures on this. And now we hear more about like, okay, leaky gut syndrome. Is there a leaky gut, leaky eye connection?
Yes. And this is actually a term that I coined. And I'd say the prototypes, there are two prototypes for leaky eye. Okay. Basically, fluids leaking out of the retinal vessels into the retina where it's not supposed to be. Fluid, protein, blood products, et cetera, lipids. And the two prototypes are diabetic retinopathy, macular edema, and even like microaneurysms are leaking, you know, that's a classic leaky eye, and also neovascular AMD, another type of leaky eye. And, you know, the blood vessels are just not functioning properly. They're not functioning properly. And it's because of inflammation. We know that in diabetes, hyperglycemia causes advanced glycation end products, and it damages the capillaries. And how do we best combat that? Yeah, you can do a laser, you can do focal laser, you can inject a medication into the eye to combat diabetic retinopathy. But wouldn't it be better if the patient really understood?
Treat it from the inside.
Yes, treat it from the root cause. Fix the hyperglycemia. And so many patients just are never educated in this, not because us as providers don't want to, it's because we don't know.
Yeah.
Right. Many, like you said,
I don't know. Let me tell you right now. I don't know. I'm here on this podcast. I'm taking notes.
Well, that's my mission, is to really make us as both ophthalmologists, optometrists, aware that we need to be having these conversations with our patients about diet. And if you don't have time, let's say you're seeing us.
It was never taught to us. I never learned this in a residency or medical school. It's not even on the American Board of Ophthalmology exam. It's not there.
I'm trying to change that. So I'm trying to change that. So the first thing I'm doing is, I have two medical students I'm working with on this. We're doing a survey of ocular nutrition knowledge across eye care providers. Once we finish that survey, we're aiming for 500 responses. So please, if you're listening, please do our survey. It's free. It's anonymous. As a thank you, you get a reference guide for ocular nutrition. You get all the studies.
We'll put a link down below. You send me the link, I'll put it down below on our podcast. We'll have all these ophthalmologists.
Yeah. So the goal is to get people to do the study, publish the results of the study, identify where the gaps are, and then go to our organizations like AAO and say, hey, these are the gaps, and we need to start teaching this, because the literature is there. It's published, but people don't know about it. And if it's taught, if it's in the BCSC series, it'll get tested and it'll be part of the curriculum. And that is in this stage of my career, that is my real mission, is to help people just learn more and help their patients.
Oh, I support you 100%. You should definitely do this. This needs to be in the BCSC series. This has to be part of our core curriculum.
It does. And I'll tell you another thing. This has been a little bit frustrating for me. Like every single AAO meeting for the past 5 years, and every single NANOS meeting for the past 5 years, NANOS is the Neuro-Ophthalmology Society, the North American Neuro-Ophthalmology Society, I have submitted proposals, abstracts, to present about this topic or these topics: nutrition and eye health, nutrition and AMD, nutrition and glaucoma, nutrition and dry eye, even nutrition and cataracts. I get rejected every time. So it's been very frustrating.
We'll feature on Cataract Coach. Cataract Coach has a far bigger reach than you have any idea. This is a ridiculous. Well,
I really appreciate it. No, thank you for giving me this opportunity to share, because, you know, also our patients are asking. I have so many people come in with, you know, they're diagnosed as glaucoma suspect, or maybe they have glaucoma, and they're like, what can I do? What should I eat? You know, what should I not do?
I get asked that on a weekly basis. Which vitamin should I take? What should I eat? How should I change my diet? And before this podcast, my answer was, I'm not sure. And now I know. Now, I got to ask you, though, what's the nutrient gap? Now, we all heard about, obviously the carrot stuff, whatever. What are the big three nutrients that most people are missing in their diet today? What are we missing?
Okay, number one goes back to lutein and zeaxanthin, two macular carotenoids. And I'm going to be a little nerdy here. I'm going to give you some numbers. Okay,
we're ophthalmologists. We're all nerds.
Yes, we're nerds. That's true, but super nerdy. Okay, so we need about 6.5 to 10 milligrams of lutein a day from our diet, or if you're not getting from diet, take supplement. How much do you think, Uday, how much do you think the average American gets of lutein and zeaxanthin compared to that 6.5 to 10 that we're supposed to be getting?
We need 6.5 to 10, we're getting less than one.
You're very close. 1 to 2. If you're good, if you eat a lot of salads, maybe you're getting two, but a huge gap, right? Between what our eyes need to stay healthy and fight against macular degeneration. And also, there is some research that shows that these macular carotenoids are very powerful antioxidants. They may even help with lens health. They may help with eye strain. They may help with light sensitivity. So this data is emerging about the other benefits, not just macular benefits of these nutrients, even cognitive health. There are studies to show that if you have enough lutein and zeaxanthin, that your cognitive health improves. I mean, why not? Why not, right? The eye is an extension of the brain. You eat for your eyes, you're eating for your brain as well.
I'll take it.
Yeah. So that's the first nutrient gap. So fill that nutrient gap either with your green smoothie that I described earlier, or eat more, or take a supplement. Fill in that gap. The next gap is what a class of nutrients a lot of people don't know about. They're called bioflavonoids. And there are many of them in nature. There's over 4,000 in nature. And these bioflavonoids, they protect plants from disease. They protect plants from inflammation and infection and oxidative stress. When we eat them, their benefits get conferred to our bodies and our eyes. So we know that There are many bioflavonoids, but the ones that are most studied for eye health are things like curcumin, which is in the spice turmeric. Also anthocyanins, which give dark berries their color. We're talking earlier about blackberries, blueberries. Why are they important? Because they have anthocyanins. And they have been shown, and I'll share this also with you that a lot of people don't know, anthocyanins have been shown to help to lower eye pressure by 3 points.
What? I had no idea.
3 points, yes.
That's a lot. That's as much as a drug on the eye.
Yes, that's, you know, for clinical trials, usually that's, you know, significant, right? You get a 3-point decrease in IOP from using this particular drop. So why is it that we as ophthalmologists don't know about this? Why is it that it's not being taught to us and then we're not telling our patients there's this gap, right? So eat your berries, and also just other dark, you know, dark fruits and veggies are good because they have anthocyanins. The more color, the better. And then lastly, omegas. We talked about omegas before, but get your omegas. More threes. Like there's a balance between 3 and 6. We need both for our bodies. I mean, they're part of our cell membranes. They're anti-inflammatory. The threes are anti-inflammatory, but we need both 3s and 6, but you need to have a good ratio. So most people on a Western style diet or SAD diet will have a ratio of like 15 to 1. So basically 6 to 3, 15 to 1. Ideally, our ratio should be about 4 to 1. So we're eating a much more pro-inflammatory diet that is not doing our bodies good. It's not doing our eyes any good. So balance out that ratio. Have more threes. A great way to do it is fish, if you eat fish. And there's this acronym called SMASH, and those are the types of fish that are highest in omega-3s. So SMASH stands for salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herring. So those are the 5 fish.
You'd be proud of me. Costco just had a sale recently on the wild caught sardines. I bought 60 cans.
Wow.
If I smell a little fishy, it's because I just love the way that like sardines and anchovies taste. I just love them. I could eat a whole can every day.
They're good for your eyes. Yeah, you're already getting probably what you need. Now, if you happen to not eat fish, like for example, I'm vegetarian. I don't eat fish. So you can get it through seeds. I was talking earlier about chia seeds, hemp seeds, flax seeds, or nuts. Nuts are a great way to get your omegas as well. So there's other ways you can do it, but make sure you're getting that. And I'll share another fun fact with you since we're talking some, you know, nutrients and things like that. Where do you think the highest concentration of DHA is in the body? DHA is, by the way, the omega-3 that's really important, one of the omega-3s. Highest concentration in our retinal photoreceptors.
Really?
Yes, the highest concentration. Yeah, it's because it's not in the curriculum. It's not.
It's in the retinal photoreceptors.
And remember, the retinal photoreceptors, they are constantly processing light energy. So they're shedding their outer membranes. They're regenerating constantly. So we need to supply our retinal photoreceptors with an adequate supply of DHA, because our bodies can't make DHA. It's an essential nutrient, meaning we need to get it externally. Eat those fish, have those seeds, eat those nuts.
So we learned a lot now. We learned about the eye-body connection. We learned about the nutrient gap. We learned about the standard American diet, how bad it is, and how we're missing certain things in our diet. We covered that pretty darn well. Now, what else can we tell from the eye? Because, right, it's the only place in the body where we can see arteries and veins and see a nerve. How can the looking in the eye tell us more about the whole body general health?
Well, as I'm sure you know, and many of your listeners know, I mean, the eye is a window not just to our soul, it's a window to our overall health. And if you actually count up, I actually made a list once of the 200 plus medical conditions we as ophthalmologists can pick up on an eye exam. It's incredible what we can see, right? Like, as a neuro-ophthalmologist, of course, you know, I've diagnosed like countless patients with multiple sclerosis based on their eye exam, or, you know, an autoimmune condition. But from the basic things like hypertension, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, cardiac disease. Now, I think, you know, we were talking in a different interview earlier about AI. Now, you know, we're using AI tools to help diagnose systemic conditions. And I think that taking a fundus photo will become an important vital sign in the future. Like even
primary the whole body health.
I think so, because like, this is this emerging field. Yeah, oculomics, basically. Yeah, exactly. I think that probably in the future, primary care docs will have non-midriatic fundus photo, you know, cameras in their offices. They'll take that picture and it'll spew out based on AI, like, what does this person have? What are they at risk for? Are they at risk for neurodegenerative disease? Are they at risk for Alzheimer's or Parkinson's? Like, we're going to learn so much. I would say probably in the next 5 to 10 years, it's really going to transform the way we think about preventative healthcare, our eye exam.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a super important topic. And I love with the neuro-ophthalmology, you've got the whole eye-brain link here. Now, I've also read some of your stuff about, you talk about, again, a migraine link. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so migraine, it has so many visual manifestations, right? Because the eye is a direct extension of the brain. Many people with migraine, they'll have aura, which are those zigzag flashing lights. That's sometimes like the very first type of migraine people get. They see the aura. They have light sensitivity. Sometimes people even get like double vision with migraine. There's something called ophthalmoplegic migraine, where they'll have like a transient third nerve palsy or sixth nerve palsy. And then people may have pupil changes. So I don't know if you've ever seen a patient like this, Uday, but sometimes patients come in where one pupil is normal and the other pupil is completely blown.
Yes. And it freaks me out every time.
Yes. And if, of course, we want to rule out, okay, is this something more serious? You know, what could it play on? Is it a third nerve? Is it something else? But if you do the workup, you examine the patient, you ask them, do you have migraine? That's a really important question to ask them, because this pupil blown phenomenon is transient. First of all, usually goes away within 24 hours or less, but usually it's a migraine phenomenon called benign episodic pupillary mitriasis.
Okay.
And people get it. It's something to do with the sympathetic system kind of going on overdrive during migraine, or sometimes people don't even have a migraine and they have this happen. It can happen without the headache. So there's a lot of connections between migraine and our vision. It's fascinating. It really is.
Now with the whole eye brain connection, which is obviously your subspecialty as a neuro-ophthalmologist, can you look it in the eye and say, okay, maybe you have a higher risk of Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or some other neurodegenerative disease down the road? Is that possible?
That is a great question. And not yet, but in the future, probably yes. So amyloid, which is, amyloid and different proteins like tau protein that are seen in Alzheimer's, get deposited in the retina. So theoretically, if we could figure out a machine, a device to image the retina in a way where we can quantify this amount of proteins that are getting deposited in the retina, we can predict who's going to develop neurodegenerative disease down the road. So there are companies now working on this. It's not yet commercially available, but yes, I think that, again, the eye exam is going to be so important for our overall health and predicting, you know, who's at risk. It's fascinating.
In the future, the patients are going to get iPhone, 38, and they're going to take a picture of their eyes, and it's going to go, oh, you know what? You better go see your doctor.
That's an interesting concept. Yeah, you better patent that, Uday.
Now, speaking of, again, the phone stuff, what about the blue light connection with the brain and circadian rhythms? Patients ask me all the time, but do I need like a blue light filter in my glasses? Should I have a blue light filter IOL? What's the scoop here?
I think it's been blown out of proportion. It really has. So the truth is that blue light, yes, we get it from all of our devices, whether it's a phone, a tablet, a computer, even our TV screens emit blue light. Even the lights that we're using in our homes, like the energy saving bulbs that we all have now, LEDs or CFLs, they all emit blue light. But the truth is, the biggest emitter of blue light is the sun.
Oh,
The sun, the amount of blue light we get from the sun far exceeds any artificial blue light that your eyes could be exposed to. So that's number one. And yes, there is a cycle of blue light that the sun emits, and it basically helps to set our circadian rhythm. So could you throw out off your circadian rhythm by exposing yourself to too much screen time later in the day? Potentially, yes. Could blue light blocking glasses help? There's really zero evidence to show that they really make a difference. Even for eye strain, this has actually been an interesting study done. Two or three studies now published looking at, do blue light glasses actually help? And they really didn't show any benefit. And the other thing I tell my patients is, most blue blockers, like if you're going to go buy a blue blocker off Amazon or something like that, most blue blockers are either clear or they're like lightly tinted. Like they'll be like a light yellow tint. I don't know if you've seen patients come in with these, but those blue blockers are only blocking about 10 to 30% of the blue light coming from the screen. So they're not even really doing much.
Placebo.
Placebo. And if you really, if you really want to block blue light, you get the deep red orange ones. And the way you know that it's blocking blue light is you put them on and you look at your screen and you look at something blue on the screen. And if you can still see blue, you know that it's not really doing its job. But the dark ones, the dark red, the dark orange ones, amber ones will block almost 100% of the blue light. And yes, if you're having sleep issues because you're on your screen all, you know, late into the night and you're having trouble falling asleep, maybe get those dark ones. But there's no point in wearing them during the day. Honestly, there's no proof that it works. It's kind of a waste. So
what about IOLs with the blue light filtering, the slight yellow tint of the IOLs? What do you think about those? Or for your eyes, would you do a blue filtering IOL with a little yellow tint, or would you do a totally clear IOL for your eyes?
I would do a clear IOL. As long as it's blocking UV light, that's all I need. That's my take on it. I don't know what the studies have shown with the blue blockers, but I would prefer to
do the ones that filter. Well, they don't block the blue light. They just filter it to a degree. I think the idea behind it is it's the same light transmittance as a 25-year-old. Because the 25-year-old, actually, the human lens in a healthy, young 25-year-old does filter some of the blue light.
Yeah.
So that was the idea behind it.
I'm not so familiar with all the optics, but yes, if that's the case, then yeah, maybe. If somebody's just worried about screens, I would say don't worry about it so much.
Is there any worry with macular degeneration, let's say, in blue light? Patients ask me this all the time.
You know, the way I answer this is, we don't have concrete data, but if screen time really accelerated macular degeneration, it would be a pandemic, right? And it's not. I mean, it's not. Like, we're all on our screens all day long. Children, adults, we're all on our screens. And if it really caused damage to our eyes, we would all be suffering right now and we would know it and we would change our habits. But that, luckily, knock on wood, fortunately, that hasn't happened. So I would say no, like it's okay.
I'm always shocked when I go to my phone and I look at, like, what's my screen time been? It's like, your screen time is 2 hours a day. 2 hours a day? No way. But it's obviously
2 hours is low. That's like nothing. Oh my goodness. So most American adults, their screen time average is about 11 plus hours a day.
What?
Yes, 11 plus hours. It's crazy.
Mind blown.
Yes. Let's
talk about digital eye strain then. Hello, this is like digital eye strain, right?
Yeah, I mean, it really, what's behind digital eye strain is, yes, some people are a little light sensitive, but really the problem with digital eye strain is dry eye. That's really the problem. Mm-hmm. People just aren't blinking enough and their eyes are drying out and they're feeling uncomfortable and strained and, you know, blurred vision. That's really what's going on.
Now you have a protocol for this, the Dr. Ronnie protocol. You got to tell me about this.
Oh, I have so many protocols, but basically, so this goes back to the nutrition part. So there are studies to show, multiple studies to show that if you get enough lutein and zeaxanthin in your diet or through supplementation, it will help to alleviate eye strain. So that's one thing. Eat more, have your green smoothie a day. If you really want to get some kind of screen filter, rather than just the blue blockers, if you really want to get a screen filter, you know, like they probably still have them, but like, you know, those big screen filters you can just put on your screen and it kind of makes it really
glowy.
Yeah, the plastic ones. They're not so great. What's better is actually, and this is part of my protocol, is actually an app that you can download. It's called Iris. And what it does is it's actually fascinating what it does. It works with the software of your computer. So what many people don't realize is when you're looking at a screen, that screen is not on all the time. It's actually flickering on, off, very quickly. Sure. So it's called a flicker rate. And it's flickering to help your screen save battery. And so it's going on, off. We may not consciously see this on, off, but our brains can detect it. And some people do feel like a little thrown off by it, that may contribute to their eye strain. So this app, Iris, iristech.co, takes out the flickering. So yes, your battery may not do as well, like it may run out sooner, but if you're suffering with eye strain from being on the screen, try the app. And the other great thing about the app is that it has it's pretty phenomenal. It has about 27 different settings and you can play around with it and find a setting that you like. So you can have a night setting, you can have a movie setting, you can have a gaming setting, healthy setting. And basically the healthy setting is it knows where you are geographically based off of, your zip code, I guess, or wherever, you say your phone is. And it adjust the blue light coming from your screen to mirror that of the sun. So in the morning, the amount of blue light coming from the screen will be higher. And then as the day goes on, it's going to gradually go down as the day goes on. So it's really, technology is our friend. It can be our enemy in some cases with eye strain, but it can be our friend also. So use the app and give it a try.
Because it's very different. I'm in Los Angeles where today was 76 degrees Fahrenheit, 21 degrees Celsius and beautiful and sunny. It was like a gorgeous day. And you're in New York City and it was probably pretty cold.
I'm so jealous. We were here and we're getting hit with this cold front soon. But it's great. The app is just intuitively smart and your eyes will give it a try. Your eyes will really, really, you can see the difference.
Now, hand in hand with using too much digital electronics and cell phones and computers and iPads is with dry eye issue. In LA, where we have 10% humidity year round, dry eye is a huge deal. Now, is dry eye just a lack of tears, or is there more like an inflammatory or even autoimmune component to it?
Oh, it's all of those things, potentially all of those combined. So most ophthalmologists probably know this already, but most dry eye, over 80% of dry eye is because of meibomian gland dysfunction.
Right.
And so when our glands, the little tiny glands in our eyelids that make the oils for the most superficial part of our tear film, when those glands aren't functioning properly, or maybe structurally they're not okay, they're degenerating, they're atrophying, our tears will just evaporate. So that's for most people, that's their root cause of their dry eye. But then coupled with that, you can think about autoimmune conditions, for example, Sjögren's syndrome or lupus or even thyroid eye disease, all of these conditions or rheumatoid arthritis, all of these inflammatory conditions, autoimmune inflammatory conditions can cause dry eye. And then you layer on top of that other things like Demodex infection that can affect the glands. The Demodex mites, certain species of them can actually get into those glands and cause dysfunction of the glands. And they're not just in our lash follicles. They can also get into the meibomian glands. And then this is something a lot of people don't know also, is these glands have hormone receptors.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know this. So this is again where I'm putting on my functional medicine hat here. Right. What is the root cause of this meibomian gland dysfunction? Where is it coming from? And so I was really surprised to know this. So interestingly, you would think that, women as they get older, menopause, postmenopausal, a lot of them have dry eyes. So it's the estrogen that is causing the problem. When the glands aren't getting enough estrogen, they're not functioning properly and that's leading to dry eye. But interestingly, the glands have not just estrogen receptors, they also have progesterone. And more importantly, they have testosterone receptors too. It's actually believed that the drop in testosterone as we all get older, both men and women have lowering levels of testosterone as we get into our 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond, that drop in testosterone is actually the trigger for a lot of meibomian gland degeneration and atrophy. Fascinating.
It's mind blown. I didn't know any of this stuff. Wow.
Yeah. So support your patient's dry eye. Omegas are important. It's interesting. I was talking about hormones. they did a study giving menopausal women HRT to see if their dry eye would get better. And unfortunately, it didn't. And this was a pretty big study. I don't remember the exact numbers, but hundreds of women took the HRT or took placebo, and surprisingly, they didn't get better. So my take on it is that it's not the systemic hormone, you know, support that we need. We need more local hormone support. So I'm actually working on a product where we can provide local hormone support externally that will get absorbed into the glands that can support the glands. But yeah, that's something in the pipeline.
I mean, my secret sauce is heavy bench press and heavy squats keeps your testosterone level high. That's what I do. I'm a weightlifter.
Yes, love that. Yeah.
And my sole claim to fame.
Weight training, right? Do you do any weights?
Oh my God.
Yeah, bench pressing, yeah.
I'm as strong now as I was 30 years ago. I've not lost any strength at all. So it's like
phenomenal.
Yeah, but it's my dumb hobby because I'm basically a meathead. So, but let's talk about.
I beg to differ, but.
Oh my! I'm gonna take my jacket off and show you. I'm literally a meathead. I'm a total meathead. It's like
really okay, all right. But it
keeps me sane. Lifting weights is something very stressful and very heavy that gets all my craziness out and keeps my brain sane. So I love weightlifting. That's my hobby.
Yeah, you'll live long because now we're learning that muscle is so important for longevity, you know?
The only problem is I go and I bench press two plates and then I go and I eat two plates. That's the problem. All right, let's talk about
you're eating two plates of leafy greens, right?
Oh, I only wish. You mean there's no lutein or zeaxanthin in like pepperoni pizza? Come on.
No, I don't think so.
Let's talk about some biohacking, because one of the very common topics for the young generation, they always talk about biohacking. What can we do to biohack here? Now, can you talk about some the good food? Are there supplements we should be taking as well? Besides the AREDs or the omega-3s, what supplements should we take?
Yeah, so the AREDs, you know, they're designed for a specific subset of people. People with intermediate stage macular degeneration who are at risk for advanced stage. So I don't recommend AREDs for everybody. And also I have some concerns about AREDs. The zinc level is very high in AREDs. The zinc level is 80 milligrams. And the upper limit of normal based on the US RDA is 40 milligrams of zinc. So I'm not sure why they chose 80 milligrams to be in the supplement. But anyway, I'm a little concerned about that. You can get AREDs that have lower zinc. They have AREDs with like 25 milligrams of zinc. But aside from that, it's so important to get the macular carotenoids, also bioflavonoids in your diet, or take a supplement. And so I would say for eye health, for general eye health, take an eye supplement that has lutein, zeaxanthin, and there's actually a third one called mesozeaxanthin, the lesser known macular.
I don't know that one.
Yeah. So think about the retina or the macula like a bullseye. Right. So at the very center is like the foveola, and then you have the fovea, and then you have, you know, further out you get the macula. So the three carotenoids are distributed in a bullseye configuration. So in the outermost circle of the bullseye, in the outermost part of the macula, is lutein. Okay. The next zone in is zeaxanthin, and right at the fovea, at the foveola, is mesozeaxanthin.
That's what I should be taking then.
Yeah. So if you had to like rank them in terms of like, which is the most powerful, which is the most, you know, powerful to protect your eyes, I would say meso is the most powerful. The issue is meso is not readily found in foods. I mean, you can get it from the skin of certain fish like trout, but how much trout are you going to eat to get mesozeaxanthin?
I eat at least a can a day. Sometimes two or three cans in one day.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think sardines have that much meso, so it's not readily found in foods, but the body converts lutein into mesozeaxanthin. That's what we think. So if you have enough lutein, hopefully you're converting it into meso, or if you're taking a supplement, why not take a supplement with all three? Lutein, zeaxanthin, mesozeaxanthin. and get your berry extracts in your supplement and your other bioflavonoids like curcumin. So if you had to, you know, take an eye supplement, make sure that those things are in there.
So the ones we talked about for the macula, and then curcumin, and then you want the dark berries, and there's something else you should be taking too? Besides, is that it? That'll do it?
Well, if you're doing it through diet, if you have, you know, lots of colorful foods in your diet, you're going to get all of these. You don't have to think about it. Again, you're going to strive for like 5 cups a day of these colorful
foods. Any other vitamins we're like deficient in? Because like, especially for you, like in cold climate, I mean, today I was walking around with a tank top. So I got plenty of sunlight. I got a good vitamin D from the sun. Mm-hmm. But are people like in you, with you, cold climates and you're all bundled up and no sunlight, is there vitamin D deficiency? Does that play a role too?
It may, yeah, and there are studies to show that people with macular degeneration have lower levels of vitamin D. And so vitamin D is incredible. It functions not just like a vitamin, it actually functions like a hormone. It's really important for a lot of our cellular processes. So vitamin D, especially on the East Coast where I live, it's like everyone has low vitamin D, especially in the winter months. But I tell my patients, like, have vitamin D, like fortified foods, or take a supplement. And you want to get your levels. So the normal range is, I think, 30. Now, don't quote me on this because I don't remember exactly, but I think like 30 to 50 is the normal range of vitamin D. But I would say if you're prone to having like an autoimmune condition, you probably want to go a little bit on the higher end. So 50 to 70 would kind of be the goal. And so, yes, vitamin D is important for general health and eye health as well also.
Now, what about, and I've heard a lot of this from friends, oh, dude, you got to do red light therapy. I have a friend who's my age, which is solidly presbyopic, who says to me, who swears to me, that with red light therapy, he no longer needs reading glasses. But when I look at his phone, he's got the big grandpa font. What are the truths of red light therapy in the eyes? Teach me red light in the eyes, especially with presbyopia or macular health.
Yeah. So this could be considered a form of biohacking. It could be, you know, people are using it for their skin. They're using it for their joints. Like there's a lot of benefits of red and infrared light therapy. Now, when it comes to the eyes, the only condition that's been like fully studied and it's proven safe and it's actually commercially available now to purchase the unit is macular degeneration. So in dry AMD, photobiomodulation, that's the fancy name for red and infrared light therapy. So PBM, photobiomodulation, has been shown to slow the disease and even to help some patients regain a certain number of lines on the chart. Now, I don't recall off the top of my head, but it's actually been shown to help improve vision. So the way it's been done, it's done like in the doc, if you go to a retina doctor's office who has this, this is the way they do it. It's given over 9 sessions spread out over 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
And so you get it done. It's actually red, infrared, and a yellow light. So it's like the machine automatically kind of like just, you know, 30 seconds of this, a minute of this. So it's already pre-programmed. And you sit in the machine and parts of it are with your eyes open and parts of it were with your eyes closed. So the light's getting through your lid. Now, when people do it at home, I know, again, it's so popular, anti-aging, you know, all of that, all of those benefits, this biohacking trend. I say, if you're going to do it, you have to be safe, number one. And the best way to be safe is put the unit at least 12 to 14 inches away from your face. So you're not like right up against it. That's the number one thing. And do it with your eyes closed. Eyes closed. Don't look right at that light. And also, you don't have to do it every day. So the studies have shown that if you do it for 3 minutes, 3 times a week, that's sufficient.
Wow, that's very little.
Very little. 3 minutes, 3 times a week. And so actually, I have a unit at home that I, you know, I have. I purchased it. So it's got red light. The red light is 670 nanometers. The infrared light is 860 nanometers. And I don't have the yellow light, but if you wanted to get like a separate yellow light, that is, I think it's about 590 nanometers or so. But it's a combination. I think it's going to be the wave of the future. Like, you know, it's probably going to be available. They're probably going to have home units for people to use. I don't know about presbyopia. That's an interesting concept as to whether photobiomodulation could help presbyopia. I don't know. Interesting.
Well, my buddy is exactly my age, and he like pretends he has good near vision, and I don't explain to him that I'm a -2 in both eyes. And so I show him my phone with like baby font, and my phone is on the lowest light setting, and I can read the whole thing. He's like, how can you do that? I'm like, because I'm an ophthalmologist.
You have the special power.
He doesn't understand optics. Okay, let me ask you, let's close this out here now. For an ophthalmologist, for my own eyes, what's the one food or lifestyle change you could recommend that I should start doing tomorrow? One thing just for me. And then I'm going to ask you, what's one thing I should be telling all of my patients?
Can I say the same thing?
Sure.
I'll go back to the green smoothie. If you want to keep your eyes healthy and do your body, keep your eyes healthy and do, you know, help your brain and your body, the green smoothie. For patients, I tell them the most important thing you can do is, two things actually. UV protection. Okay. A lot of people still fight me on it. They say, I don't need sunglasses. My eyes are fine. But I would tell them like, look, yeah, show them pictures. Yeah. Like this is what could happen if you're not protecting your eyes, even on cloudy days. So that's one thing. And the second thing, which really doesn't get that much attention, but it's so simple to do, is hydration.
Interesting.
Hydration. And I can't tell you how many patients I've seen over the years who come in with, unfortunately, NAION, which is non-arteritic anterior ischemic optic neuropathy. They have other risk factors, but you know they're dehydrated at night, and you know they don't get enough blood volume getting to their eyes, and they wake up with vision loss from an optic nerve stroke. And I've even seen patients, interestingly, I've seen a handful of patients now who come in with CRVOs because they're dehydrated.
No way.
Yes. And I think it's just, you know, when you have not enough blood volume, the blood becomes stagnant and you get hyperviscosity in the veins. And of course, there are probably other risk factors as well, maybe hypertension or, you know, other things going on. But I have seen patients, unfortunately, who, you know, I really think it was dehydration that led to it.
Wow.
If people go on long flights.
That's like the worst thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really, just simple thing, just stay hydrated. And I'll share with you my thumbnail guide for hydration.
Please.
So of course, disclaimer, talk to your doctor before you do this. Yeah. But for most people who are generally healthy with no cardiac issues, no kidney issues, you take your body weight in pounds. And that's approximately how many fluid ounces you should be having every day. So it doesn't mean only water. It could be other hydrating foods. Like fruits and veggies are hydrating. They have a lot of water content. You could have other liquid beverages. So it's not just water.
That's a lot of water. I'm doing some math here. I'm 200 pounds. That's 200 ounces. Like a Coke can is 12. No,
200. Okay. So 100 ounces, not 200. So you take your body weight in pounds, divide by two.
Okay.
Remember to divide by two. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, whoa, that's a lot of fluid.
Otherwise you're going to end up with hyponatremia, and please don't blame me for that.
Everyone who listens is a doctor. So this is not for patients. This podcast is purely for doctors.
Okay. But yes. So like, let's say you weigh 160 pounds, then 80 fluid ounces. So 200, so 100 fluid ounces. And again, it doesn't have to be only water. It could be other things. Just stay away from the sugary drinks. Stay away from too much caffeine. And if you're having lots of fruits and veggies.
My poison is this, Coke Zero. My God, I'm addicted. I can't stop.
I used to be an addict also.
I love Coke Zero. It's just like, there's some magic in there that just, I can't explain it.
Yes. My mouth is watering now that you just said that.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's okay once in a while, but don't let your 100 ounces be that, please.
Well, that's some great advice as well. So, you know, I really learned a lot from this podcast. To be frank, this is a topic that I knew almost nothing about. It wasn't taught to me in my training. It's not taught to me in my continuing medical education. But I think it's so critical, and so many patients ask me about it.
Yes. Yeah. And we're going to change that. We're working on changing that. Yeah.
I'm your cheerleader right now. I'm telling you, right?
Needs to be taught. And also, like, if you, you know, it takes time to do the counseling, right? If you don't have time, you're seeing, you know, 60 patients a day, 80 patients a day in busy practices. That's very common. Outsource it. You know, have a dietitian and nutritionist that you can refer to. Like, you don't have to do the counseling. Send them, though, to somebody. Send them to someone to help them control their blood sugar, to help them, you know, support their retina from macular degeneration. Like, outsource it, please. But don't ignore it. It's like such a simple thing that if patients were just educated about it by a provider, it could change the trajectory of their vision health.
I think you're so right. Wow. What an enlightening podcast. I've done a ton of podcasts. You're going to be podcast number 150 something, but this was so eye-opening to me. I truly enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thank you. No, it's a lot of fun always talking to you. And I hope to keep sharing. So.
Oh, for sure. And we're going to have whatever links you send me, we're going to put the links down here in the description. So if you're watching the video on YouTube or even on the podcast, the links are down below. Please click on those and learn more. And I got a reminder, listeners and viewers, remember, I got a new Cataract Coach podcast every single Sunday on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google, anywhere you find a podcast, you find the Cataract Coach podcast. Plus, of course, we have a new Cataract Coach video every single day, 2,800 something days in a row and counting. And plus, check out our sister channel, RetinaRounds.com. So until next time, I'll catch you later.